Frankie went out into the street before the house and looked up into the sky. She stood staring with her fist on her hip and her mouth open. The sky was lavender and slowly darkening. She heard in the neighbourhood the sound of evening voices and noticed the light fresh smell of watered grass. This was the time of the early evening when, since the kitchen was too hot, she would go for a little while outdoors. She practiced knife throwing, or sat before the cold drink store in the front yard, or she would go round to the backyard, and there the arbour was cool and dark. She wrote shows, although she had outgrown all of her costumes and was too big to act in them beneath the arbour. This summer she had written very cold shows, shows about Eskimos and frozen explorers. Then when the night had come, she would go back into the house. But this evening Frankie did not have her mind on knives or cold drink stores or shows, nor did she want to stand there staring up into the sky, for her heart asked the old questions, and in the old way of the spring she was afraid. She felt she needed to think about something ugly and plain, so she turned from the evening sky and stared at her own house. Frankie lived in the ugliest house in town, but now she knew that she would not be living there for much longer. The house was empty, dark. Frankie turned and walked to the end of the block and around the corner and down the sidewalk to the west's. John Henry was leaning against the banisters of his front porch with a lighted window behind him so that he looked like a little black paper doll on a piece of yellow paper. "Hey," she said, "I wonder when that papa of mine is coming home from town." John Henry didn't answer. "I don't want to go back in that old ugly house all by myself." She stood on the sidewalk looking at John Henry, and the smart political remark came back to her. She hooked her thumbs in her pockets of her pants and asked, "If you were going to vote in an election, who would you vote for?" John Henry's voice was bright and high in the summer night. "I don't know," he said. "For instance, would you cast your vote on C.P. MacDonald to be mayor of this town?" John Henry did not answer. "Would you?" But she did not get him to talk. There were times when John Henry would not answer anything she said to him. She had to remark without an argument behind her, and all by herself, like that, it did not sound very smart. "Why, I wouldn't vote for him if he was running to be a dog catcher." The darkening town was very quiet. For a long time now, her brother and the bride had been at Winter Hill. They had left the town 100 miles behind them, and now were in the city far away. They were them in Winter Hill, together, while she was her, and in the same old town all by herself. The long 100 miles did not make her sadder and make her feel more far away than knowing that they were them and both together, and she was only her and parted from them by herself. And, as she was sickened with this feeling, a thought of an explanation suddenly came to her, so that she knew and almost said aloud, "They are the we of me." Yesterday, and all the 12 years of her life, she had only been Frankie. She was an I person who had to walk around and do things by herself. All other people had a we to claim, all except her. When Bernice said we, she meant Honey and Big Mama, her lodge or her church. The we of her father was the store. All members of clubs have a we to belong to and talk about. The soldiers in the army can say we, and even the criminals on chain gangs. But the old Frankie had had no we to claim, unless it would be the terrible summer we of her and John Henry and Bernice, and that was the last we in the world she wanted. Now all this was suddenly over with and changed. There was her brother and the bride, and it was though when she first saw them, something she had known inside of her. They are the we of me, and that was why it made her feel so queer. For them to be away in Winter Hill while she was left by herself, the hull of the old Frankie left there in the town alone. "Why are you all bent over like that?" John Henry called. "I think I have a kind of pain," said Frankie. "I must have ate something." John Henry was still standing on the banisters holding to the post. "Listen," she said finally, "suppose you come on over and eat supper and spend the night with me." "I can't," he answered. "Why?" John Henry walked across the banisters, holding out his arms for balance so that he was like a little blackbird against the yellow window light. He did not answer until he safely reached the other post. "Just because." "Because why?" He did not say anything, and so she added, I thought maybe me and you could put up the Indian teepee and sleep out in the backyard and have a good time. Still, John Henry did not speak. We're blood first cousins. I entertain you all the time. I've given you so many presents. Quietly, lightly, John Henry walked back across the banisters and then stood looking out at her with his arms around the post again. Sure enough, she called. Why can't you come? At last he said, because, Frankie, I don't want to. Fool, jackass, she screamed. I only asked you because I thought you looked so ugly and so lonesome. Lightly, John Henry jumped down from the banisters, and his voice, as he called back to her, was a clear child's voice. Why, I'm not a bit lonesome. Frankie rubbed the wet palms of her hands along the sides of her shorts and said in her mind, now turn around and take yourself on home. But in spite of this order, she was somehow unable to turn around and go. It was not yet night. Houses along the street were dark, lights showed in windows. The darkness had gathered in the thick-leaved trees and shapes in the distance were ragged and grey, but the night was not yet in the sky. I think something is wrong, she said. It's too quiet. I have a peculiar warning in my bones. I bet you $100 it's going to be a storm. John Henry watched her from behind the banister. A terrible dog-day storm, or maybe even a cyclone. Frankie stood waiting for the night, and just at that moment a horn began to play. Somewhere in the town not far away, a horn began a blues tune. The tune was grieving and low. It was the sad horn of some coloured boy, but who, she just did not know. Frankie stood stiff, her head bent and her eyes closed, listening. There was something about the tune that brought back her all of the spring, flowers, the eyes of strangers, rain. The tune was low and dark and sad. Then all at once, as Frankie listened, the horn danced into a wild jazz spangle of zigzags and that zigzagged upwards with sassy nigger trickiness. At the end of the jazz spangle, the music rattled thin and far away. Then the tune returned to the first blues song, and it was like the telling of that long season of trouble. She stood there on the dark sidewalk, and the drawn tightness of her heart made her knees lock and her throat feel stiffened. Then, without warning, the thing happened that at first Frankie could not believe. Just at that time when the tune should be laid, the music finished. The horn broke off. All of a sudden, the horn stopped playing. For a moment, Frankie could not take it in. She felt lost. She whispered finally to John Henry. He has stopped to bang the spit out of his horn. In a second he will finish. But the music did not come again. The tune was left broken, unfinished, and the drawn tightness she could no longer stand. She felt she must do something wild and sudden that never had she had done before. She hit herself on the head with her fist, but that did not help any at all, and she began to talk aloud. Although at first she paid no attention to her own words and did not know in advance what she would say. I told Bernice that I was leaving town for good, and she didn't believe me. Sometimes I honestly think she's the biggest fool that ever drew breath, she complained aloud, and her voice was fringed and sharp, like the edge of a saw. She talked and did not know from one word to the next what she would say. She listened to her own voice, but the words she heard did not make much sense. You try to impress something on a big fool like that, and it just like talking to a block of cement. I kept on telling and telling her. I told her I had to leave this town for good, because it's inevitable. She was not talking to John Henry. She did not see him anymore. She had moved from the lighted window, but he was still listening from the porch, and after a little while, he asked her, where? Frankie did not answer. She was suddenly very still and quiet. For a new feeling had come to her. The sudden feeling was that she knew deep in her where she would go. She knew, and in another minute the name of the place would come to her. Frankie bit the knuckles of her fist and waited, but she did not hunt the name of the place and did not think about the turning world. She saw in her mind her brother and the bride, and in the heart in her was squeezed so hard that Frankie almost felt it break. John Henry was asking in his high, charred voice, you want me to eat supper and sleep in the teepee with you? She answered, no. You just a little while ago invited me. but she could not argue with John Henry West or answer anything he said, for it was just at that moment that Frankie understood, for it was just she knew who she was and how she was going into the world. Her squeezed heart had suddenly opened and divided, her heart divided like two wings, and when she spoke, her voice was sure. "I know where I'm going," she said. He asked her, "Where?" "I'm going to Winter Hill," she said. "I'm going to the wedding." She waited to give him a chance to say, "I already knew that anyhow." Then finally she spoke the sudden truth aloud. "I'm going with them. After the wedding at Winter Hill, I'm going off with the two of them to whatever place they will ever go to. I'm going with them." He didn't answer. "I love the two of them so much. We'll go to every place together. It's like I've known it all my life, that I belong to be with them. I love the two of them so much." And having said this, she did not need to wonder and puzzle any more. She opened her eyes and it was night. The lavender sky had at last grown dark and there was slanted starlight and twisted shade. Her heart had divided like two wings and she had never seen a night so beautiful. Frankie stood looking into the sky. For when the old question came to her, the who she was and what she would be in the world and why she was standing there that minute, when the old question came to her, she didn't feel hurt or unanswered. At last she knew just who she was and understood where she was going. She loved her brother and the bride, and she was a member of the wedding. The three of them would go into the world, and they would always be together. And finally, after the scared spring and the crazy summer, she was no more afraid.